Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the January 22nd edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Douglas County Board. Hear complaints made about Assessor's Office by Ben Crane. The Douglas County Board held their monthly meeting Wednesday where Deanna Shields of the Arcola Township addressed the board regarding recent assessments made in Arcola. Shields admitted the assessor for Arcola Township, Melissa Petrie, was late in submitting her books, and the supervisor of assessments, Cynthia Bayer, refused to accept them on two separate attempts. As Shields explained, our assessor did not meet the deadline imposed by the supervisor of assessments. Although she did make an attempt to turn her books in late, Cindy rejected them. She further explained there were discrepancies between the assessor's valuation and those provided by Alan Romine, who Douglas County hired to do the assessments in wake of the late books. The board invoiced the Arcola Township for the work Romine did. After Shields finished, Gary Luth asked Shields a few questions, ending on one of clarity. Just to be clear, you turned in your books late, correct? Another township assessor, Mary Kingerly of Bourbon Township, expressed concerns about unfair practices in the Supervisor of Assessment's office and the Board of Review. The taxpayers in Douglas County, and specifically Bourbon Township, are not getting a fair assessment due to practices in the Supervisor of Assessment's office and the Board of Review offices. King highlighted a specific issue where an 18,000-square-foot commercial building was omitted from the assessment in Bourbon Township, despite her repeated request to the Supervisor of Assessments to correct the error. By refusing, she, Bayer, is failing to comply with the Illinois state statute and is in violation of law. By refusing or neglecting to follow property tax law, the taxpayers of Bourbon Township are being cheated in that the tax burden is not distributed fairly amongst taxpayers. The board provided no comment or questions regarding her thoughts. Moving to the business items of the meeting, the board approved Resolution 25R1, which raised the millage reimbursement rate by 3 cents to 70 cents per mile. A culvert wing replacement engineering services agreement was made with Bourbon Township to not exceed $6,000 was also approved. The board approved a multitude of county bridge fund petitions where they provided for $57,000 request from Tuscola Township, a $9,000 request from Bowdry Township, and renewed 9 county bridge fund petitions in Resolution 25R2. Finally, the board amended a motion from their December meeting approving an appropriation for the state's attorney appellate prosecutor program from $7,000 up to $10,000. The next article is from the Arthur School Board, moving forward with Health Life Safety Study by Ariana Cherry. Superintendent Shannon Cheek discussed with board members about moving forward with a Health Life Safety Study in partnership with BLDD Architects at the board meeting held last week. He recently has been in contact with BLDD and specifically Damian Schlitt and is working on a schedule of visits and rough outline of events. The study will assess the functionality of school buildings, including HVAC systems, classroom sizes, and overall building condition. The study is expected to take a couple of months and will cost between $10,000 and $13,000. The findings will be presented to the board, who will then decide whether to submit the information to the Illinois State Board of Education, ISBE, for further evaluation. If the findings are submitted to ISBE, and once a determination by them is made, the project takes about 5 years to complete. Elementary principals in the Arthur School District recently shared their updated progress in reading levels. Principal Chris Foreman of Atwood Hammond Grade School expressed how proud he was of the students in his building for exceeding their reading goal, with 64.8% of students reading at or above their grade level. Andrew Peralta, principal of the Arthur Grade School, shared that 56% of his students are reading at or above their grade level, while Principal Marlo Graham stated that 40% of her students are reading at or above their grade level, compared to 39% from last year. The board approved several donations from community organizations, including $2,000 from MCC Thrift Shop to both Atwood Hammond Grade School and Levington Grade School for the backpack program. An additional $2,000 donation was received to help pay for lunch balances. The December 2024 bank statement was $2,678,000. The following balances were recorded. Education Fund, $10,300,000. Building, $2,378,944. Transportation, $473,000, and bonds and interest, $219,000. At the end of the meeting, Cheek expressed his gratitude for all the extra work that was completed by the maintenance crew and janitorial staff during the recent snowstorm. He mentioned that with snow comes extra work of keeping their buildings clean. The next article from the Arcola City Council, approved change orders and payment by Ben Crane. The Arcola City Council met for their regular meeting on Monday night and approved multiple change orders and a payment. The first approval came from change order number 2 for the Libman truck route amounted to $7,800, while change order number 1 for the redeveloped Main Street project amounted to $34,000. The changes were for quantity adjustment and added pay items for the truck route and additional work on the water main for the Main Street project. The council also approved a second pay request for the redeveloped Main Street project amounting in $312,000. Ordinance number 25Z1 was approved for a wall-mounted sign at 1 Libman Way on the north side of the plant. Finally, the council approved resolution 25R1, which is a resolution authorizing execution of a service agreement for the supply of electricity for residential and small commercial retail sellers. Our electric aggregation agreement runs out in June. This spring, the municipal aggregation we are in will seek proposals and will require a quick turnaround for our approval to lock in the new rates. This resolution authorizes us to sign those documents, said City Administrator Bill Wagoner. The agreement allows residents to choose an alternative electrical rate on Ameren. No vote was taken on proposed water rates following a rate hike by Illinois American Water, which supplies water to Arcola and Tuscola. The next article, Arcola Man Shot During Attempted Break-In, by Ben Crane. The Arcola Police Department responded to a shooting in the 200 block of South Pine Street at the corner of Washington Street at approximately 12 a.m. Friday morning. One male, Dalton Cresson, sustained injuries from a gunshot wound and was transported to an Urbana hospital. Cresson was shot after reportedly attempting to break into the home, according to sources with knowledge of the investigation. A warrant has been issued for his arrest. Earlier in the evening, Cresson reportedly was a patron at Main Street Lounge causing trouble and got into a fight which led to the police being called. The Douglas County Sheriff's Office responded to the scene first, where Cresson was uncooperative and tased by the DCSO. The Arcola Police Department declined to arrest him, according to the source, who spoke on condition of anonymity, since the Illinois State Police is handling the investigation. It is suspected that Cresson was intoxicated at the time of the encounter, the source said. Cresson then made his way to the scene of the shooting, where he reportedly attempted to enter the north side of the residence where he was shot. Cresson is still in the hospital and has been charged with criminal trespass of a residence and residential burglary, according to the sources. The Illinois State Police Division of Criminal Investigation, Zone 5, was asked to assist the Arcola Police Department with the investigation and did not pick up multiple phone calls from the County Chronicle. The Arcola PD and DCSO have declined to comment and referred the County Chronicle to the ISP. Cresson is an Arcola resident and a 2014 graduate of Arcola High School. The next article, Tuscola Sweet Petunias Blooms with Passion and Perseverance, by Ben Crane. In the old Navy spot at the Outlet Mall in Tuscola, a new business is taking root, blending the owner's lifelong love of antiques with an entrepreneurial spirit. Sweet Petunias, the brainchild of Zena Onstott, has become a hub of activity, drawing in locals and visitors alike. "I've always just loved antiques," Zena shared. "My mom was a big antique person, and I have a lot of her things." This passion, combined with the serendipitous opportunity, led Zena to embark on her latest adventure with only about 30 days to get everything in order. Onstott, who owns Tuscola Packaging Group as well as landscaping business with her husband Chuck, was kind of a perfect storm. Zena's background in supply chain and logistics, as well as her experience in the automotive industry, has proven invaluable in her entrepreneurial journey. "I do supply chain and logistics, so I was a buyer in an automotive and, you know, just knew what to do." The decision to open Sweet Petunias was driven by a perceived need in the community following the closure of Paddy Wagon Antiques. "It just seemed like it would be a perfect opportunity." While the weekends have been bustling, Zena acknowledges the challenges of balancing multiple businesses. "Mondays and Tuesdays, it's pretty dead, but that gives us time to get our paperwork caught up and maybe to move some things around the store." Despite the demands, Zena finds the experience deeply rewarding. "It's very rewarding. I like talking to people, so this has been something I didn't realize that I missed as much as I did." Zena's journey to Tuscola is equally intriguing. "We moved to the area in 2005. I lived in Rantoul before that." The decision to settle in Tuscola was influenced by her son's interest in football. "I knew Tuscola was a big football town, so we chose Tuscola out of the areas locally because we knew Stan Wynke and wanted T to play football for Stan." As Sweet Petunias continues to bloom, Zena's vision extends beyond the state store's walls. "Hopefully other businesses see us here being successful, and maybe that'll encourage other entrepreneurs to come out and do something too." With a passion for antiques, a knack for business, and a commitment to community, Zena Onstott is cultivating a unique and vibrant destination in Tuscola. From her roots in southeast Missouri to her current entrepreneurial ventures, Zena's journey is one of resilience, adaptability, and a deep-rooted love for community as Sweet Petunias continues to blossom. We'll move now to the obituaries. Roger E. Lawyer, 77, of Oakley, passed away on Saturday, January 18, 2025, at Springfield Memorial Hospital in Springfield. A funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, January 22nd, at Cerro Gordo United Methodist Church at Cerro Gordo. Visitation will take place from 4 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, January 21st, also at the church. Interment will follow the funeral service at Cerro Gordo Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made directly to the Lawyer family in care of Emil Kerr. Marie Brookhart, Claire Marie Brookhart of Munson Brookhart, died on January 14, 2025 as a result of complications related to cancer. Please join us in celebrating Marie's life on Wednesday, January 29th at 1 p.m. at Cox Chapel in Highland Park United Methodist Church, 3300 Mockingbird Lane in Dallas. A reception will be held in the church fellowship hall following memorial service. In lieu of flowers, Marie's family suggested donation to Preservation Dallas, preservationdallas.org. Merle H. Stutzman, 69, of Arthur, passed away at 10:24 p.m. on Tuesday, January 14, 2025 at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. Visitation was held Sunday, January 19th at Penn Station, Arthur. Funeral services were held Monday, January 20th at Penn Station. Pastor Doug Davis officiated. Beryl was in the Arthur Cemetery. The Edward Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. Jean Chambers, 92, of Pearson Station, passed away at 1:15 p.m. January 14, 2025 at the Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Private family services were held. Memorial contributions may be made to the Atwood First Baptist Church or the American Council Society. Hilligosh Schrader Funeral Home is handling the arrangements. Bethany Grace Mast, infant daughter of Marlon J. and Laurie May Mast of rural Tuscola, was stillborn at 12:46 a.m. on Wednesday, January 15, 2025 at St. Anthony's Memorial Hospital in Effingham. Funeral services were held Thursday, January 16th at the home of maternal grandmother, parents Clifford Ray and Janine Hirschberger in rural Tuscola. David Lynn Kaufman officiated. Burial was on the family property. Nelson M. Hirschberger, 78, of Arcola, passed away on Sunday, January 19, 2025 at 5:20 a.m. at his residence. Funeral services were held Wednesday, January 22nd at the HCK Building, Arthur. Bishop Daniel Rock officiated. Beryl was in the Auto Cemetery in Arthur. Visitation was held Monday, January 20th and Tuesday, January 24th, all at the HCK Building. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. The next article, NASA Invests in U of I Doctoral Students' Grassland Research, by Hannah Spangler. A University of Illinois doctoral candidate received a $150,000 investment from NASA to create a detailed grassland map using remote sensing. Wendy Dorman, the recipient of the prestigious three-year research grant, plans to map grassland habitats across Illinois where 99% of the prairies have vanished. Her goals include finding out which habitat features are most important for the endangered birds to maximize best practices to protect them in the small amount of grasslands available. I've been really frustrated by the lack of available data to use when trying to understand what's happening to birds, Dorman said, adding that the current research is not at the level needed for making management decisions and conducting effective modeling. Dorman will use remote sensing, which involves using satellite imagery to collect information to produce a high-quality map of the cold and warm season grasses and grasslands across the state. She believes this will help provide targeted support to individual bird species based on their survival needs. It's important for conservation and for management and wildlife or other environmental reasons that we have a good idea of where grasslands are and what their qualities are, said Mike Ward, a U of I professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. The research can also benefit farmers enrolling in conservation programs and help enhance habitats for birds like quails and pheasants, Ward explained. The detailed maps can show where to place grasslands to maximize agricultural and new environmental benefits. Ward told FarmWeek that the use of remote sensing in grasslands is a lot like the use of precision technology in agriculture. They are working with small amounts of grassland and using technology to optimize conservation practices. A strategic placement of habitat can go a long way, he said. Right now, it's kind of overwhelming to have so much information and so much data. But as we go on, all this information will keep on coming in and we'll be able to do a better job of managing our resources. Research has already begun on a small scale, and Dorman and her team are preparing to ramp things up. This semester, she will work with students from natural resources and environmental sciences, computer science, and physics to bring together the different disciplines needed for this project. She hopes to have preliminary results around March or April, before moving into field work throughout the spring and summer. The field work will help compare satellite data and real-life observations. You need to actually physically go into the field and see what's on the ground, Darman said. We don't just trust the models that we produce. We compare them against what's actually in the field. The next article, Meyer finishes in top 16 out of over 70 at state pageant, by Ben Crane and Stephanie Weirman. Claire Meyer, the reigning Miss Tuscola and Miss Moultrie Douglas County, competed in the Miss Illinois County Fair Queen pageant this weekend, making it into the final 16 roster. The 19-year-old Lakeland College sophomore is one of 74 county fair queens from across the state who vied for the coveted title. It's definitely more than just a pageant, Meyer said. You take the whole summer and you travel to all the county fairs that you're invited to, and you can be invited literally to all of them. The annual Miss Illinois County Fair Queen pageant is a whirlwind of activity, and Claire Meyer can attest to that. It was jam-packed. There wasn't a time when I was just, you know, laying around, said Meyer. The pageant kicked off on Wednesday night with the contestants' arrival, followed by early morning practices starting at 8 a.m. on Thursday. We started learning the dance. We started learning all the walks, the turns, all those things, the current Moultrie County Fair Queen recalled. Interviews were the highlight for this queen, who said, I just love interviews, and I think I've gained that from my experience in FFA. Meyer's deep agricultural background has prepared her well for the competition. Growing up on a farm just south of Tuscola, she's been involved in 4-H and FFA from a young age, even using her chicken project as the foundation for FFA success. I don't know, I just feel like I was brought up like a little boy just because my dad didn't want to do everything by himself. We needed to learn, Meyer said. I've always been an outdoors person, always enjoyed ag. I guess it's all I've ever known. She described the interview process as a mix of personal questions and trickier questions designed to test her on-the-spot thinking. I got to walk into my interview, and there were a lot of questions about myself, different questions about things that I knew, and then there were some trickier questions. They were kind of on the spot to kind of see how you think different things like that. The preliminary competition on Saturday was a blur of activity. Everything's moving extremely fast, and no, not a lot of time to dilly-dally around, and barely enough time to make sure you still have lipstick on, she said. The prelims included all the contestants' hard work. Your interview scored into it, and you have all your turns, your walks, your swimsuit, your speech, all of that is figured into your prelim score. Making the top 16 finalists was a proud moment. I just had, like, this feeling of fulfillment and pride for myself because, like, I don't know, a lot of girls that were there dreamed of this day ever since they heard that this was a thing. The final rounds on Sunday were jam-packed as well, with little time for breaks between pop questions, speeches, swimsuit, and evening gown competition. But through it all, the new queen found camaraderie with her fellow contestants. I really love being with everyone in the room after the top 16 was called. I know it probably sounds cheesy and there could probably be a better answer, but I really do think that because everyone is feeling the same thing, but in so many different ways. Joanna Fulcher, 20, of Geneseo, was crowned the 67th Miss Illinois County Fair Queen. Fulcher represented Henry County at the 114th Illinois Association of Agricultural Fairs Convention on Sunday evening. She is currently attending Black Hawk College and will graduate this May and plans to continue her education at Carl Sandburg College to pursue a degree in dental hygiene. Delaney Epley of Christian County was named the first runner-up. Claire Oliver of Sangamon County was named second runner-up. Kaylee Ford of Western Illinois Fair was named third runner-up. And Paris Van Dyke of Clay County was named fourth runner-up. The top 16 finalists were Ella Horn of Williamson County, Claire Oliver of Sangamon County, Olivia Scheich of Champaign County, Keandra Zerusen of Effingham County, Colleen Schumann of Calhoun County, Haley Bodie of Monroe County, McKinley Rexroth of Warren County, Paley Davis of Georgetown Fair, Paris Van Dyke of Clay County, Annalise Richter of Madison County, Joanna Fulker of Henry County, Claire Meyer of Moultrie Douglas County, Kaylee Ford of Western Illinois Fair, Elizabeth Corey of Schuyler County, Delaney Epley of Christian County, and Grace Lindley of Bond County. Non-finalist awards were awarded to Ella King of Mercer County, Ruby Crum Award, Addison Early of Macoupin County, Best in Stage Presentation, Bella Welch of Okawville, Best in Communication Skills Competition, Olivia Pollock of McHenry County, Best in Beauty and Physique Competition, Emerson Fleischer of Knox County was the People's Choice Award winner. Fulcher will be a summer employee at the Department of Agriculture. She will travel to around 30 county fairs and will be the official hostess at the Illinois State Fair in Springfield and the Duquesne County Fair in Duquesne. As Queen, Fulcher's main duty is to emphasize the importance of agriculture and county fairs to Illinois. The next article, Illinois Supreme Court hears argument on challenge to Illinois' concealed carry law, by Ishmael Belcura from Capital News. Amid multiple recent challenges to state gun laws, the Illinois Supreme Court heard arguments on Tuesday concerning the constitutionality of concealed carry licenses and open carry bans. Under Illinois' aggravated unlawful use of a weapon statute, individuals are not allowed to carry a firearm in public unless the person has a valid concealed carry license. Tyshawn Thompson, the defendant, was convicted of violating the statute in March 2022 after having been involved in a highway shooting 2 years earlier. Thompson, represented by state's appellate defender's office, has since challenged the statute as unconstitutional based on the 2022 U.S. Supreme Court case, New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin. After a lower court affirmed his conviction on June 2023, Thompson appealed the decision. Most states have some type of licensing process characterized as either shall issue, meaning they are issued if they meet the criteria set by the law, or may issue, licensing done at the discretion of authorities. Shall issue licensing allows citizens to obtain permits through a non-restrictive process, while may issue licenses require applicants to give a proper reason for needing a weapon. In the Bruin case, the U.S. Supreme Court found that may issue licenses were unconstitutional, ruling the New York law at issue violated the 14th Amendment by making it difficult for people to show proper cause in order to exercise their basic Second Amendment right to bear arms. The court also decided states must show that their laws are consistent with the nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation. Eric Castaneda of the State Appellate Defender's Office argued Illinois' concealed carry law was unconstitutional according to the Bruin precedent because of the license's prerequisites. One of the requirements for a concealed carry license is another permit, the Firearm Owner's Identification, or FOID card. A FOID card allows an Illinois native to purchase and possess firearms and ammunition. Thompson had an FOID card but was still found guilty of violating state laws for having a firearm in his vehicle in 2020. He was sentenced to 30 months in prison. One point of contention for Castaneda was the requirement to obtain two licenses to carry a weapon in public. The test provided by Bruin shows that the state has to point you in the direction of a historical analog, and that is well established, Castaneda said, and it simply can't do that. There's simply no historical analog to show a double licensing regime. Because of the need for a secondary permit, as well as the required 16-hour training, Castaneda said Illinois' requirements for concealed carry were equivalent to a may-issue license. Castaneda also argued the double licensing requirement did not pass the historical tradition test because there was no equivalent to Illinois' concealed carry license requirement at the time of the drafting of the Second Amendment, which protects the right of citizens to keep and bear arms. Assistant Attorney General Garson Fisher, who represented the state, said the concealed carry law was a shall issue in nature. He cited the Bruin decision itself, which referenced 43 states, including Illinois, that have shall issue licensing processes. The court said in no uncertain terms that shall issue license regimes, including explicitly Illinois, are constitutional, Fisher said. Fisher also said the defendant never applied for a concealed carry license and would have been likely approved for the license if he had gone through the appropriate steps. The assistant attorney general noted that the historical tradition test does not require an exact copy of the 18th century, but that the purpose of the regulation must have a similar purpose to regulations from that era. Castaneda made additional arguments against any regulation prohibiting open carry, which is illegal under state law. In a court filing, the defense argued that concealed carry law is facially unconstitutional and is categorically bans law-abiding citizens' Second Amendment right to publicly open carry a firearm. We think the concealed carry and open carry are two categorically different conducts. One is protected under the Second Amendment and the other which is not, Castaneda said. So the government can regulate concealed carry as it pleases, but the same does not apply for open carry. Thompson was convicted for violating a specific part of the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon statute concerning the concealed carry licenses, so it's unclear if Castaneda's client has a standing to challenge Illinois' open carry ban. What the relevant provision of AAUUW, aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, says that you cannot legally carry a firearm in public unless you have a currently valid concealed carry license, Fisher said. It doesn't say anything about open versus concealed carriage. Illinois is not the only state to face challenges under the new Bruin framework. The U.S. Supreme Court recently declined to hear a challenge to a pair of Maryland state firearm regulations after the lower courts were affirmed by lower courts. One of the challenged Maryland regulations was the ban on assault rifles, which is similar to an Illinois law that was temporarily struck down as unconstitutional by a federal judge in November. Illinois immediately appealed that decision, and a federal appeals court allowed the law to remain in place until it hears full arguments from both parties. The other Maryland regulation included a licensing process similar to the dual system in Illinois. The Illinois Supreme Court did not indicate when a final decision would be issued in the Thompson case. Ishmael Bakura is a graduate student in journalism at Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism. There's another article, Tight Global Supply Keeping Fertilizer Prices Elevated, by Rhiannon Branch. As farmers enter another year of predictably tight market margins, it does not look like fertilizer prices will grant much relief to the balance sheet. The problem is we're starting 2025 with nitrogen and phosphate values looking fairly firm on tight supply and demand, Josh Linville, vice president of fertilizer at StoneX, told FarmWeek. We're worried what that means for our prices going into the spring. Chinese exports and European production of urea are both falling, which means global prices could be pushed higher. That should result in a situation where we have to start doing a lot of work to get the imports coming in and that we very desperately need, Linville said. We're going to have to move our price up quite a bit to make that relationship happen. He said prices for urea, ammonium nitrate, and anhydrous ammonia, which are more commonly used in Illinois, usually follow the urea market. One fertilizer that is well supplied globally and therefore mildly priced is potash, but that could change after President Donald Trump takes office this month. We have to worry about the threat of 25% tariffs against Canadian goods, said Linville, who noted Canada is the world's largest producer and exporter of potash. These tariffs will have a real effect on the farm side if they get implemented. Linville said Trump is known for using tariffs as an economic weapon, but for a commodity market like fertilizers, the benefits weren't likely to outweigh the consequences. A lot of times, the farmers of this county that implement the tariff is really the one that pays the price, he said. We're going to have to watch that because it could have an adverse effect on our pricing. On the other hand, Linville said the world enjoyed a sense of peace during Trump's first term with fewer wars and global conflicts from 2016 to 2020 compared to recent years. On the flip side, I'm very hopeful that he can bring back a period of tranquility and we can see markets start to calm down, trade flows return back to normal, and get prices back to historic norms, he said. Linville said, as always, it will be important for the farmers to convey their fertilizer intentions to suppliers in 2025 so they can plan accordingly. I understand it's easy to want to bury your head in the sand in these kind of times, but we need to have more information flowing rather than less, he said. And despite the hefty delay in the fall of 2024 fertilizer application season, Linville expects the number of spring applications to be about normal. It was probably one of the most unorthodox fall application seasons we've ever seen, he said. The first several weeks of November, hardly anyone across the Midwest turned a wheel. But he said the weather opened a window around Thanksgiving and Midwest farmers took advantage of it. We surveyed the industry and I think we hit about 90% of what we expected fall run was, Linville said. So that's fortunately keeping that horror story that we're talking about for springtime off the table. Fertilizer prices in Illinois averaged between $650 and $775 per ton for anhydrous ammonia as of December 27th, up an average of $9.46 from the previous 2 weeks, according to the Illinois Production Cost Report. Prices range from $679 to $760 per ton for diammonium phosphate, up $3.33, $400 to $525 for potash, down slightly, and $525 to $554 for urea, unchanged at that same date. And we have time left for some briefs. FFA Strawberry Fundraiser. The ALAH FFA chapter is taking orders for strawberries. Deadlines for orders is Wednesday, February 12th, and strawberries are set to arrive the week of February 23rd. Contact any FFA member or call the ALAH office at 217-543-2146 for more information. Shiloh's Italy Tour. Carolyn McIntyre and Deb Derby are organizing a tour group of Tuscany, northern Italy, mountains and lakes in Switzerland. The tour will take place from June 1st to the 10th, 2026. An interest meeting will be held on Sunday, January 26th, 2 p.m. at Shiloh High School, Hume. If interested but unable to attend, contact Carolyn at McIntyre at shiloh1.org. A correction, last week's paper, one of the letters is named Michael Stumeyer. The last name was misspelled. Thanks to autocorrect's infinite wisdom, we didn't catch it till after we'd gone to print. We apologize for the error. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.